Hey, hi everybody. This is Certified Life and Executive Business Coach, Dr. Nelson Beltajar, coming to you live from Toronto, Canada. And for those of you listening, I'm asking you to please buckle your seatbelts and get ready, because Aubrey is about to take you on the road to rediscovery with another great episode. Grab your favorite beverage, sit in your favorite room, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. So, as you've heard in countless previous episodes, this show takes a deep dive into our darkest days, struggles, adversities, transformation, and more. At times, it can get pretty heavy, but it's quite necessary for helping others and giving others a feeling and sense of hope. Therefore, for a lighter, more spirited conversation, I want to personally invite you to subscribe to our sister podcast, our second podcast called Talking in Threes. That's right. Here we talk about our three favorite of anything, countless topics from sports to pizza toppings, ice cream flavors, movies, TV shows, animals, and more. I also invite you to share your three favorite of anything. To be a part of it, just join our public Facebook group and subscribe to the podcast. I will leave links to both in the episode show notes. My special guest is a pedophile survivor and author who recently released her explosive tell-all novel, Shayla, a semi-autobiographical novel inspired by real-life tragic events. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Regina LaFrance to the show. Regina, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you, AJ. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here today with you.
Oh, thank you. We are equally thrilled to have you here as well. So, you know, we have a lot to unpack, Regina, and I would love for you to start us off by sharing for the listeners' benefit. What was life like for Regina between the ages of 6 and 9?
The life was wonderful, was amazing. I now call it the ladybug days because I was very small and dark and cute. And my father told me I was as cute as a ladybug. Oh. I had a very special relationship with my father. We were always outside working in the farm. He yes. taught me everything I know now. I never forgot being a young child, just happy and running free through the field.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So just a fulfilled life.
Yes.
Love and care and protection yes. by your parents in those early ages, running through the field.
Yes.
Very peaceful, like a child should have.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. That's why my mission now is to keep children safe. By creating awareness that if something changes in the life of a child,
yes.
if they go from being happy like I was to being withdrawn and quiet and
yes.
becoming a rebellious teenager,
mm-hmm.
you need to pay attention before it gets to the point where it got with me.
Absolutely. Parents should look for those signs, right?
Yes.
Yes. So let's go now at age 9. In age 9, is that a time where you enter a new school or a different school or?
So I was always a very curious child, and I always wanted to know everything and do everything and be outside and run around and climb trees. And I never wanted to play with dolls or be inside the house, just outside, just doing things. That's why my father and I had a wonderful bond. I was always outside with him. And my parents thought that it would be wonderful for me to learn how to play an instrument and have something to be focused about and learn, because I like to learn everything.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they spoke with our local priest to have him teach me music lessons, and he began to molest me right away from the moment that I went for my first lesson mm-hmm. all the way to when I was 10 years old. I during my nine-year-old times, I pleaded with my mother not to make me go. And she asked me so many times why I didn't want to go, and I never said anything. He was telling me that I was no ladybug, that I was a cockroach. In fact, the night that he attacked me and violated me sexually and physically very, very badly, he called me cockroach that night and told me that I would always be a cockroach and that I was stupid and ugly, and that if I ever told my parents would give me away. And so from that time on, I became a very rebellious teenager and just sad, very, very sad all the time, to the point that when I was 13 years old, my father gave me up for adoption. But that didn't work out. The priest actually gave my father money to bring me to Canada to let me stay there to live with another family. But that didn't work out. So I came back with my father to the house, to the island in Portugal. And I never talked to my father again. And he never talked to me again. He didn't like me anymore. And I didn't trust that anybody loved me or cared for me. So when I was 18 years old, I had the opportunity of coming to the United States, and I left, and I never looked back. It was a new life. It was a new everything. It was new, the new language, the new culture.
Yeah.
I was happy, and I always did well.
Yeah.
Those values and morals that I learned when I was 6, 7, 8, and 8 years old, I applied them. But inside my mind, I was always very sad. I always looked in the mirror and saw a really, really ugly person.
Mm.
I have a scar here that I suffered from one night being with a priest. Mm-hmm. I told him I hated him, and he slapped me very hard, and I fell, cut myself here on the edge of a shovel that he made me use. So I had that scar there, and I looked in the mirror, and that's all I saw for 40 years. So one day when I was 52 years old in 2015, I was working on a client as a massage therapist, and my client was unusually tensed.
Yeah.
So I asked her if she had anything going on, and she said she was very stressed out because a little girl didn't want to go to summer camp.
Yeah.
That year, that summer. Right. And I asked her if she had asked the little girl, and she said she doesn't tell me why. She just cries and says, "Mommy, don't make me go." That very moment, I had a vivid memory of when I asked my mother not to make me go. And I became very, very upset, and I had to terminate the session. I told her that I believed that she was unusually tensed up and upset. Right. So I made it that she shouldn't have the massage that day, and right. I rescheduled, but it was really me. I went home that
day. Yeah, something that triggered in you as she said this.
I went home that day, and I called on to my best friend, and I asked my best friend to come to the house, and that was the first time ever that I told anybody what had happened to me when I was 9 years old, really 10 years old.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my goodness, for heaven's sake. So, Regina, so if you don't mind, if I can just back up for a moment.
Sure.
How long did the sessions last? I mean, from 9 until what age?
When I was 9, he started molesting me, and he started touching me and forcing myself to do oral things with him.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I was after 10 years old that he asked my parents if I could go to his house to help his elderly mother. And my parents said that I could go. And that very same night, he attacked me that night. And then it was brutal. It was very violent and very, very just bad physically and sexually. I remember closing my eyes and thinking that I was going to die that day.
My goodness.
And then after when he was done, he left me there. I could have died if his mother came out and helped me. And she brought me in the house and she cared for me. But I am by no means sticking up for her or anybody. I'm right. just saying back then, right. that's how it was. And I believe that if my own parents had known about this, they would have done the same thing. Don't be telling nobody.
Right.
Nobody needs to know about any of this. Nobody needs to know what goes on in our family. And that's how the priest's mother did. She protected her own family for fear of being shamed. He had the reputation of being a very bad man. And yes, he did. He had fathered a son to a woman in a different village, and then they moved him to our village. And then there was another young lady that had been his mistress for a number of years. And then she got away. In 2016, her and I reunited in the United States. It was wonderful. That's, yes.
That's incredible. That is yes. really incredible. Yes. So this gentleman, was he at one point highly regarded and respected? Very.
Yes, he was the priest of the people. He was an author. He was a professor at the local high school. He was the priest of the people. Everyone liked him, and everybody just looked the other way because he had that craziness about him. But the attacks on me resulted as a pregnancy, and then his own mother with a neighbor, they performed an abortion on me at their house. And the night that they did that, he took me to the cemetery, and that's the shovel that I fell on. He asked me to dig a hole to abort in the cemetery. And I remember being in so much pain, being so sad.
Sure.
I just didn't have, I lost all of happiness that a child could have. And then he took me back to his mother's house. And once I healed from the cut that I have in here, his mother sent me home, and she said that would never, never happen again, that I could rest, that it would never happen again. And it never happened again, but I never healed from it. So when I had my flashback in 2015, I told my best friend, and she told me that I should write about it.
Yes.
So I did. I wrote about 10,000 words in 2015, and then I put it away because I still was too afraid to be shamed or to be judged.
Right.
And about 3 years ago, I went looking for that document on an old laptop, and I was able to recover the document. And I then took time, and I sat down, and I was ready then. And I wrote my book, Shayla. And that was the first time that my husband knew anything about it. He didn't know. And it was a shock at first that I was going to write a book. Yeah. And then it was a shock that all that had happened to me. But when I began to write, I wrote because I wanted to create awareness to people in charge of raising children to keep children safe.
Right.
And I was passionate about that after I had that vivid memory. Mm-hmm. I always remembered my abuse, but I never remember that piece of asking my mother not to make me go until that day.
Yes.
And that was the day that I said to myself, I want to stop children from hurting, because children don't know how to communicate verbally, but they show you signs that they don't want to go somewhere. And that's why I wrote my book. But in the process of writing it, I was able to go inside and nurture my inner child and tell my inner child that it wasn't my fault. And there was another blessing that came through that said, you have to go out and spread the good news to victims of trauma. It doesn't have to be sexual. It could be physical or emotional. It could be anything.
Yeah.
Because trauma to the brain results in sadness and depression. And some people might say, oh, I never got sexually violated, but my parents were alcoholics and we suffered a great deal when we were children. Trauma is trauma. So if you suffered trauma when you were young, now you're raising children yourself and you don't know how to give love or to look for the signs of that child because it's all you know.
That's right.
And that's why I was able to reach in my and tell myself that my inner child was still hurting and I needed to nurture her. And I did that by recognizing that it's never, never a child's fault.
Absolutely. It never, never is. And oh my goodness, Regina, I'm speechless, you know. I mean, you have had one absolute tremendous journey of just low self-esteem.
Yes, right.
Abuse, just neglect, yes. Low regard, and no child brought into the world wishes for this or wishes to be treated like this.
That's right.
And there is a certain degree of innocence and spirit that a child has that the parents nurture and protect for the child so they can keep that childhood spirit, you know, within themselves as they grow as a child, run through the field,
yes.
Climb trees, play with yes. dolls, you yes. know, go fishing, I mean, play sports, whatever it is.
Yes.
And because of the brokenness in this world, and what adults who may have gone through something traumatic as a child in their experience, and then they project it on children that don't even ask for it, and it breaks their spirit. And even though you may have the physical healing, you know, throughout right. your body, those wounds are very, very deep.
Yes.
And since those wounds are so deep, Regina, I couldn't help but ask, how and where did you draw the strength from to do the writing? Now, I'm so glad you mentioned you first started writing, you wrote 10,000 words, and it was still a little fresh in your mind, where you just couldn't go much further at that time, because I can imagine you felt some sense of almost reliving it as you're writing it.
Yes.
Yeah. And
I cried a lot.
Oh my God.
I cried a lot. And I just cried. I made this room here, this sunroom that I have in the back of my house, my office.
Yeah.
And I would come out here and I just cry a lot. And just let it all out. And then once I realized that I have the knowledge to understand that my behaviors through my teenage years, my 20s, my 30s, and my 40s
right.
were a result of how I felt about myself.
Yeah.
And I never believed anyone that said they loved me. So I sabotaged every relationship I ever had,
yeah.
friendships,
yeah.
jobs. I never really believed that anyone valued me, but that's only because I didn't value myself.
And that was the spirit that was broken.
Yes.
My goodness. Oh, Regina, I have to ask. Now, you picked up the pen and you started writing again after recovering
yes.
the files from your old computer. And did you start, where did you start to slowly gain that strength? Was it through the writing? And as you wrote, you start to realize and understand that this is to no fault of your own or forever happening. When did you start to slowly gain that strength?
The first part of my book is about the abuse.
Yeah.
And then the second part is all about survivorship and blossoming into a wonderful person.
Yes.
So when I wrote down what happened through my not so much teenage years because you're too young, you do crazy things anyway.
Yeah.
My 20s, my 30s, and my 40s, and then I was into my 50s, my early 50s. Mm-hmm. I call it running red lights and leaving accidents behind. I never looked back to see anything. If something didn't go the way I wanted or the way that I expected, I was out. I was done. And I was very defensive all the time. And I always wanted to be right about things. And I was always the best person at the gym. I was always the fastest person that ran. I was always the one that had to have everything perfect because I could control those things.
Did you feel peace at that time?
No, no. I'm talking like in the past, in my mind, I was always sad. I was always depressed. I would go to counseling, and then once the counselor would say, let's sit down and talk about this. Let's find out what's the root of your sadness. You seem to be doing fine in life.
Yeah.
And then I'd be out. I would never go back. So when I evaluated all those stages of my life, and I looked in the mirror, and I said, there was always love around you. It was you. You're the one that needs to change. You're the one that needs to look at how you behave and how you react to things and to people. So I began to take a look at myself and say, we have two of these and two of these and one of these.
That's right.
So listen more, observe more,
right,
and speak what you mean and mean what you speak. And I do that for me.
Yeah.
And I created an imaginary bubble around me that I don't allow anything but positive things in love. And that goes for this in here.
That's beautiful. I mean, yeah positive energy. But and it sounds like you applied an extraordinary amount of self-awareness.
Yes.
To come to that realization about yourself.
Yes.
But how you were in coming to that realization, saying, it's me, it's not everyone around me, it's me, I need to change. But it may have been you, but as a result of the abuse, right?
Yes.
And just the verbal abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and that it was a manifestation of all of that that made you how you were. In being defensive, always had to be perfect, abandoning situations and connections with people. And again, you know, it's for what you've gone through, it takes a tremendous amount of self-awareness to come to that realization, because almost like an alcoholic or a drug addict, right?
Yes.
There can't be any transformation until that person themselves is ready to change.
That's right.
And you found it deep within yourself where you were ready to change and take control for once in your life, take control of the result that you are in now from the earlier abuse and the years of rebellion as a teenager.
Yes.
And take control of that and turn your life around. And that is nothing short than an amazing, incredible transformation, Regina. I can't tell you enough. And I know you know already, but I wanted to ask you, did you ever at any point in that self-realization come to consider that I can make a change in this world by leveraging what I have gone through, because there's many others who have gone through this.
Yes. So just going to touch briefly on what you said, like an alcoholic. In my book, I actually mentioned that. So great minds think alike. So I go into explaining how I do it.
Yes.
I developed a love mindset for self, and look, just like an alcoholic, you have to stay sober. You cannot, because if you have one drink, then you have to start all over again.
That's right.
It's the same with me in my love mindset. I have to stay in a love mindset, and that's my technique.
Yes.
I read positive affirmations.
Yes.
I constantly manifest for wonderful things.
Yes.
And I stay positive. I can make any situation now shine like a diamond.
That's beautiful.
And I did use how I used to be to my advantage now, so I can bring forward what I've done. I took my victim badge and I retired it. And I made a commitment to retire that victim badge. Yes. So now that it's retired, it's just like retiring a police officer or a firefighter or a soldier or whoever, a doctor or a nurse.
Right.
They're retired now, so they don't longer work. The same goes to my victim badge. I put it away. It's retired. And I started wearing my triumph badge.
Yes.
And every time I have a trigger, and they do come.
Oh, yes.
Okay? Yes. Every time I have a trigger, I do not go and grab my victim badge because it's retired.
Right.
I stay in survivorship. I stay in positivity. I stay with a love mindset where I nurture this person here. And that's what I want to teach. The triggers are very difficult to handle at first because we don't recognize them as triggers.
Right.
I used to think that it would be like a personal attack if somebody said something. Now, I don't say anything to them. If I have a trigger, I say to myself, self, this is a trigger. And you know how to recognize it, and you definitely know how to handle it. Do not engage.
Right. That's how you manage it.
Yes.
And that's how you manage it. And it just, the whole culmination of what you just said there, Regina, in my mind, tells me that those past events, you do not let define
that's right.
who you are.
That's right. So, and now people just love me so much. Mm-hmm. Because I accept them. I allow them to love me, and I love them right back.
Yes. And you manifest and you give positive energy and vibes throughout your entire world.
Yes.
Yeah. And so I want to ask, what would you say if I would ask, who is Regina LaFrance?
Who is Regina LaFrance now? Mm-hmm. She's a ladybug.
Back to the ladybug. Life is full circle. It comes back full circle.
She's a ladybug. Yeah. She likes to be outside, and she likes to go on hikes and go to the creek and go out with friends and have friends over the house. And now my husband actually likes me more, and I like him more because we don't.
Yes.
We don't go at it, and I'm more calm. I'm more understanding. I'm more compassionate, but I always like to say I'm more compassionate to myself. Yes. I'm kind to myself. And I have people at the grocery store or anywhere, everywhere I go, people come and tell me, I like your hair. Oh, I like your shirt. Oh, you just something about you. You're just walking around here like a butterfly. And and now it's just wonderful. And I like who I am.
And you're at peace.
Yes.
Regina, that is beautiful. That is beautiful. You are truly, and I mean this in the most sincere, positive sense, you are a warrior of overcoming trauma, tragedy, and adversity.
Thank you. I am working with one of our local very large sheriffs here in North Carolina. I'm going to be coming into the jail in Charlotte to speak with the women that are incarcerated or awaiting trial. And I want to just go in there a couple times a month and talk to them just about recognizing love.
Yes.
For self.
Yes. Yes. Again, changing the world, and you're doing it one heart at a time.
Yes. Know?
And that, what you are going to share in that women's prison is going to be life-changing.
Yes, you know? And that's what I want. I want to spread the good news, because they too can retire the victim badge. And even if for them, and that's in that situation, if they have to be incarcerated for a number of years or whatever, they can still have peace. Yes. Because peace is where you are, not how you live. It's where you are. If you have peace in your mind, then you can achieve success and love from within.
Yeah, you truly can, you know. And I love how your mission and your cause is multidimensional. It's not a message just for parents.
It's for all people that are hurt.
It's for all people that are hurt through any kind of trauma, not just sexual abuse or trauma, but, you know, any kind of trauma. Like you said, trauma is trauma. And so, you know, this is a loud and clear message that you are that you're projecting into the world. I wanted to ask you one question about an event, and get your thoughts on this event. And because of the event, if you prefer not to speak on this, you don't have to. Okay, but there was an event that you mentioned called World Youth Day. It's a worldwide encounter celebrated every 3 years, I guess, in a different country. I think recently it was in Portugal. Was there something about that event that troubled you after what you've experienced that you can share for the listeners?
Yes. So the the Pope actually visited Portugal for that event, and he spoke with the youth there, because there was the Catholic youth event, international event.
Yeah.
And during that time, I had submitted a sworn statement to the Catholic Church in Portugal, letting them know what happened to me, and asking for an apology, at least, from the church. Yes. And they never replied. They received it, but they never replied.
Oh my goodness.
And there's a group in Portugal that had put up some signs that they wanted to create awareness about the abuse. Yes. And the officials of the country took those signs down the day that the Pope arrived there.
Hiding it. Sweeping it under the rug.
Yes. And then we sent another letter to the church, asking for a reply, for an apology. And the church said that because of the accused person who was now deceased, they don't have a way of knowing if that is true, and they there's nothing that they can do, not even an apology. They did, however, offer love and support.
Okay.
Okay. But I have a lot of that here with the people I love. So
yes, you do.
I didn't take them on that.
No, I can understand. I can understand that. And I mean, just the insensitivity of it, though. And this is a religious institution.
Portugal Portugal is one of the only countries in the world that have not recognized any clergy sexual abuse, have not recognized or spoken to any victims or offer anything other than, we offer support if you want to come back.
You know, and thank you for sharing that. And I'm sorry to hear that Portugal is the only country that doesn't recognize that. And I don't want to go too off topic, but you made me think of, I think maybe a year or two ago when the Pope came to Canada, I believe, and he came to Canada to make a public apology on behalf of the clergy, I guess, for some sexual abuse amongst you know, young people that has happened. And I don't know. I mean, if Was that what the government was afraid of, being in that type of spotlight? If they left the signs up and the Pope came to the country and saw that?
Possibly.
Possibly. I see. Regina, I want to ask you your thoughts and your where you are from and where your mindset is when I speak the word forgiveness. Where are you in the element of forgiveness?
In 2017, I went back to my home country and I visited the church in the areas where I was molested and abused. Mm-hmm. And at that time in 2017, I released that priest from being a burden in my life. I said, you are no longer part of my life.
Yes.
You don't belong to me at all in my mind and my heart and my soul. You were no good, and you now need to find yourself a place where you can either ask for forgiveness or whatever it is that you need to do. But you don't belong in my mind at all. You are gone now. And I forgive myself for the years that I lived such depressed life.
Yes.
Forgive myself for having been so hard on myself. And at that point, I understood that it's never a child's fault. Every child is born perfect.
That's right. And with spirit.
That's right.
Pure spirit and of purity.
Did I forgive the priest? I don't know, but I don't think about him, and I don't give him any credit for anything whatsoever.
Yeah, he gets no power at all.
None.
Yeah, and this
that's
is
what I want to teach people that are still hurting, and people that actually are and still in difficult relationships, whether it's with a parent or with a sibling or a spouse or whatever.
Yeah.
If you give them that power, they're going to continue on. They're going to continue on taking over your mind and how you feel about yourself.
Yeah, yeah, and that's what they do when they have that power over you.
Yes.
Yeah, and this is a tough question, but I want to ask, again, talking about forgiveness, was there a need for you to consider forgiveness for your parents?
No, because they didn't know.
They didn't know. Okay. Okay.
They didn't know anything. In my book, I write a spiritual letter to my father, letting him know why I became a rebellious teenager. Mm. And I asked my father to forgive me for having been so difficult as a teenager. But this is the reasons. And I said, dear father, these are the reasons why I became who I was.
Mm.
And going back all those years, I want you to know I was very hurt then. The night that you let me go to the priest's house to help his mother, this and this and this and this happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I said to, in the letter, I say to my father, let me tell you who I have become. I have become humble and kind, and I am that sweet ladybug that you once had. And until we meet again.
Yes. Full circle.
And another thing. That when I think about creating awareness, I know deep down in my heart, if my mother had had a person like me telling her to look out for signs, that your child is in distress and your child does not want to go that to that music lesson, you need to pay attention.
Yes.
I know my mother wouldn't have let me go.
Oh, there you go. I see. I understand. And I really, really want to thank you for that clarification.
Yes, okay. I'm not sure that my parents will call the law and tell the law that this man did these things. My parents were very old-fashioned, and back in the 60s, that's how it was. Don't be telling the neighbors what goes on in our house.
Right, right.
But my father and my mother would have put a stop to it.
Yes, in their way. Yes.
Right.
I
but
understand.
They didn't know.
No.
And because of that, I made peace with my mother before she passed, because I visit her a lot.
Good.
But my father passed away when I was in my 20s, and I never made peace with him.
Never made peace. I understand. Yeah. And I mean, the spiritual letter to your father sounds absolutely beautiful. I'm sure halfway through I'd be in tears just reading.
it's sad. It's emotional.
Yeah. And I understand. And that's part of the healing.
Yes.
I would imagine that that was part of the process.
Yes.
Writing the book, of course, telling your story.
Yes.
And the letter to your father that you didn't have a chance to make peace with before he passed. Right. Yeah. And he feels that. He knows that.
Yes.
Now, right? Forgiveness is so powerful. And I know, and I appreciate you clarifying there's no need for forgiveness for your parents because they didn't know. The forgiveness that you have for yourself.
Yes.
And so forth. Absolutely powerful, especially because it then removes the power.
That's right.
The person who did this, right?
Yes.
And it reclaims your power.
That's right.
And it better equips you for moving forward with your life.
That's right.
When you reclaim that power and forgive, and in a lot of people's mind, that may seem counterintuitive, but that is truly how it works. Did it work like that for you?
Yes.
That's wonderful.
It's very difficult for us to go in and forgive ourselves and love who we are.
Yes.
And people tell me, I have no idea where to start.
Yes.
And I say, well, me, it was easy. I started with being outside, going by the creek, doing gardening, because I always loved that when I was little.
Yes.
But you get it. It's baby steps. I didn't just get here.
Yes.
I read a lot of positive books, Dr. Phil, Joe Osteen,
right.
The Secret, so many books.
Yes.
I read everything. I made notes. See, I always have a book.
Always
in
have
pen.
Notes, huh?
Yes. And I love to just read positive quotes. And now we have YouTube. So you want to know something positive or you want to learn about something, just ask YouTube, whatever it is that you like.
That's right.
And there it is.
And there it is, for sure. Regina, I wanted to share with you, I'm going to draw a scenario, okay? In fact, we're going to turn the clock back about 3.5, maybe 4 years, okay, at the height of the pandemic. And I'm going to share with you something that may not sound related to what we're talking about, but just bear with me. I will come back to something that I wanted to share with you that touched my heart, okay? Going back 3.5, 4 years at the height of the pandemic, not only were we in the midst of a huge economic shutdown because of the sickness where so many people were dying, but in the United States, we were in the midst of just social injustice that was happening. And you know, no matter what side of the fence you're on, I'm not asking for any side or taking a side, but we've seen it on the news where, you know, police brutality of people who look like me, men who look like me, you know, my color in different cities throughout the United States, to the point where, you know, they can't breathe and they're strangled and they die. George Floyd, I mean, you know, and so many countless others. And so, people who I'm friends with of different colors, you know, they're like, man, I'm so sorry. This is happening to African Americans like this, you know? And their words are sincere. I can tell when someone's sincere, when they're expressing, you know, being sorry about hearing a story like that. And of course, you know, at this point we get tired of hearing just the, I'm sorry that happened. I'm sorry that happened. And we're like, you know, take a stand with us, right? Take a stand with us and be part of our voice in saying this is wrong.
That's
you
right.
know, and some people of other colors just don't know what to say. They they want to be compassionate. They want to express it, but they don't want to offend either, you know? And I feel for those people, even though, you know, they're not my color. I mean, I have no disrespect for them or anything. I want to feel, and I do feel for those people because they want to express compassion. They want to express, empathy, right? And unless they've gone through it, you know, they can't say they understand because they haven't gone through it. So what do you say, right? So I say all that to say this. There's something that you wrote that was something absolutely profound and just completely beautifully written. And in my mind, this wholeheartedly demonstrates the compassion, empathy, and alliance that you have decided to take as the new ladybug. Okay, I'm gonna read it to you, and I don't know. I was truly, this resonated with me and truly touched me. You said, to all the people who have fallen victim to abuse as children and never had a voice to speak up, I hear you, I feel you, and I am at one with you because I am you. I have to say, I can't imagine a statement as loving as this coming from someone who hasn't experienced what you have. Your message and takeaway, I believe, is loud and clear for all those you come into contact with and you talk with and all those who read your book. So I just want to thank you for that beautifully written statement, because that truly does say it all when it comes to compassion, empathy, and alliance.
And I'd like to say something to those people that don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. Love doesn't ask questions. Love just loves. Mm.
I love that. Love doesn't ask questions.
I've never not know what to say to you or anyone that is like you or anyone else.
Yeah.
Love just loves.
Love just loves. Doesn't ask questions.
Look at a set of eyes and a nose and a mouth and two arms. Look at a human being.
Yeah.
And love. And if you out there that don't know what to say, don't say anything. Just love.
Just love. That says a lot.
That's what I do. And it works.
Two words that have a huge, tremendous meaning. Gina LaFrance, oh my goodness, thank you so much. And I want to ask you, how can the listeners learn more about you, connect with you, and pick up a copy of your book?
So right now we have Shayla for sale on Amazon. Mm-hmm. And Shayla Regina LaFrance, or Shayla Regina or Shayla LaFrance, because there's a children's book out there named Shayla. So you want to make sure you put my name in there. My website is LaFranceMedia.com. And you can read anything about me, about what happened, what I've been doing. And there's a section there on my website that it shows the different covers of Shayla. First, we had a picture of me without a mouth. Then we had a picture of me with a black rose over my mouth. And that's how I felt when I started writing the book.
Oh, my.
No voice.
No voice.
And I was very harsh. And I wanted to make a statement. This is a woman without a mouth, without a voice. Well, now we have a beautiful cover that it's soft and good appeal. And you have an author now that just wants to love you and beautiful. Encourage you to come forward and write about yourself. And don't be shameful, because it is never a child's fault. Never.
Never
a child is born perfect. It's what that child learns that makes them think negative things, and it's what that child goes through that makes them suffer trauma and then don't like themselves. Mm.
Yeah, it truly is. It truly is. Once again, a strong message heard loud and clear. Regina, I just want to thank you once again for coming on the show, being transparent, and yes, showing us your strength, your resolve, and your transformation in coming from such a tragic path to the ladybug you are today. I really thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. And if anyone ever needs me to come and speak about survivalship and about self-love and self-respect, I'm your girl.
Fantastic. We're going to have links to your website and the Amazon book.
Yes.
And any other links you want on the episode show notes, so the listeners can click those links while listening to this great conversation.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, Regina. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And as always, we want all of our listeners to know that when dealing with life's struggles, you're never alone, and there's always hope. There truly is. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone who needs inspiration and support. And as always, we're roadies on this journey of life, and it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.